All right, you're back in the DFSR here with the PGA podcast on Tuesday, June 19th. I'm Doug Norrie from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com here with Chris Durrell, our main PGA contributor. Chris, how's it going, man?
It's going great. Getting ready for another week coming off the U.S. Open, and luckily we have another, being at this tournament's, you know, fairly close to Long Island there, we've got, you know, a pretty good field this week, better than the Travelers in the past, so excited again for this week.
I was going to say, we're gonna go back and talk a little bit about the U.S. Open from last week, trying to do a quick post-mortem on that, and then talk about the field. But I did notice the same. I was like, wow, after coming off such a big field for the U.S. Open, there just seemed to be a lot of great golfers going this weekend as well, which makes for some interesting discussion, some interesting ways to kind of play it. But let's talk real quick about U.S. Open. Obviously, coming off a weekend of just kind of like just crazy golf, man. I mean, I'm kind of relatively new to the golf space here, especially in terms of just watching it, but I felt like it was just like the craziest just trial by fire watching this tournament starting on Thursday. I would say I watched about 70% of the coverage that they threw out there, and just the amount of shots, the bogeys, just the, I mean, you can talk about the Mickelson thing, between all this, like DJ losing the lead in the final round. Me texting you Kapka updates as he comes down the thing because you were stuck at a baseball game. I mean, give me some of your thoughts about the past week in the U.S. Open, how it stood out to you in terms of having just watched a ton of golf in the past in your own right, and just how it kind of lived up. And do you like that kind of tournament style? Do you like the way it kind of played out, or you think it was just sort of just too all over the map?
Well, it sure lit up Twitter for four straight days, that's for sure. A lot of people not liking it, a lot of people liking it. And, you know, the people that do like it are the ones that are, you know, long-term golf fans, been watching for years and years and years. I mean, if you want a birdie fest, you can tune in to, like, I don't know, any of the other 30, 35 tournaments during the year, and you're going to see pretty much a birdie fest of winning scores of minus 15 to minus 20. This is the one time of the year, like, this is supposed to be the hardest golf tournament of all the golf tournaments out there. And I mean, the USGA always, they kind of ride that fine line of a very hard tournament and almost unfair. They'll make a lot of adjustments where a lot of tournaments won't be making adjustments. Like, for instance, Saturday night, they watered the greens after a horrible Saturday where, like, I think the average score was around, like, 75 to 80 or something for the field.
And they came out and apologized for that afterwards, which you really don't see governing bodies do a lot. I mean, even I read that. They came out and said that they were apologizing for the conditions on late Saturday. And it seems like, I mean, do you think they overcompensated for, like, after looking at the scores for Sunday?
I think they overcompensated a little bit. They kind of had to because they were kind of expecting high winds again, so they didn't want it to dry out for the late guys coming out. You know, the final tee times, the Kopkas and Johnsons and Reed was up there, Berger, Finau. But they didn't really get that, so there was really good scoring conditions. Like Tommy Fleetwood, he shot 63 on Sunday, and I think that was the lowest U.S. Open score ever, and like almost the lowest major championship score ever. So, I mean, I think they overcompensated a bit, but I think they had to just because they were kind of looking for that wind to come again.
Yeah, so we get an interesting week. I struggled on DraftKings, having Kuchar and Rahm miss the cut, which was a disaster for both of them, and still kind of was like not too far out of it considering how some of the other golfers went. FanDuel went 6-for-6 getting through the cut, so I was feeling good, pretty good about that. I know, and then last thing we kind of mentioned at the top, that you know you had Kapka outright as one of your just straight line bets. I don't know how many of those you put in on a week to week basis, but you seem like you've been kind of on a winter heater over here over the last, I don't know, month or so.
Yeah, it's actually been a heater. I've hit usually every week. What I'll do is I'll go and I'll fit. I like to get two, like in that 10 to 20 to one range in there, and then usually I put 5 or 6 in altogether, depending on the week. Usually invest, like 5-6 units. I'm usually in like that $5 to $10 per golfer kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I had Kopka, and something I've been really looking at doing this year is betting because they usually don't open the odds like for these tournaments until Monday morning of the tournament. Well, for majors, they're usually open, you know, weeks in advance. Like we've already got the Open Championship in Scotland. It's already open, so you can go bet those guys now. So that's what I did with Kopka. He was at 45-1 like back in mid-April. I didn't get him at that 45-1, but I got him at 38-1. And Monday morning before the U.S. Open, he was 19-1. So I made, you know, almost doubled it there. Well, that is exactly double, actually. So it made me a lot of money by going and betting him early on. Yeah. So it ended up being a very, very profitable week. And it was my fifth, speaking of heaters, yeah, it's been my fifth outright since the Masters. I think that's maybe like 9 tournaments or 8 tournaments, so a little over 50%. So yeah, it's been an awesome run when, you know, looking at that. And even on DFS, you know, I didn't have the greatest week because I had a lot of Thomas. I had a lot of, who else was up there, Stenson and Rose. They didn't have the greatest outright finishes. So I did make a little bit of money on both sides, but, you know, barely above scratch and even, which to me is a win every week if you can scratch even and go on to the next week. Because I'm only a GPP player. I don't play cash games very much at all. Starting to get into a little bit more now, but I'm mostly a GPP. So I take that as a win because I'm looking for that big win every week. So, you know, if I only hit that big win, you know, once a month kind of thing, once every 4 tournaments, even twice, then, you know, you're doing really good.
Well, let's talk about the Travelers this week. So, lots of, like we said, really good field with a lot of guys that we have large sample sizes on. We'll talk about some of who your system likes. We'll talk about some of how our new sort of just cash game style system is drawing out, and we can see where we agree on those. We're coming off a year where Spieth won it last year in a playoff with Berger. They are both back in it again this year. Spieth obviously coming off some struggles with the US Open, though he really can't be faulted too much for struggling here. And then Berger I think Berger finished pretty well. But we'll talk about these guys, and we'll talk about who you like. Walk us through the course. Walk us through what we're kind of looking for in terms of, you know, what statistics are drawn out for you in golfers, and understanding, obviously, this is going to be much different than what we experienced last week of the U.S. Open.
Yeah, most definitely. Like, we're looking at average winning score here. Just looking at the last 5 years, we've had Spieth at minus 12 in a playoff last year with Berger, Knox the year before minus 14, Bubba Watson in 2015 at minus 16 in a playoff with Paul Casey. Streelman won in 2014 at minus 15, and Ken Duke won in 2013 at minus 12. So we're looking at that minus 12 to minus 15 range. Going to see a bunch more birdies this week. We are at TPC River Highlands in Cromwell, Connecticut. So it's just kind of up the road a little bit, couple-hour train ride or, you know, bus ride or whatever, you know, whatever they're taking up there. So that's kind of why the field is a little bit stronger this week, because it's, you know, close proximity. So why not just jump up, play another tournament? So we've got a really strong field this week. And TPC River Highlands, it's another par 70 on the shorter side. It's one of the shorter courses at 6,840 yards. And with that par 70, again, we're going to have 12 par 4s. So I'm going to be looking at par 4 scoring. And specifically, 8 of those 12 par 4s are coming in the range of 400 to 450 yards. So I'm going to be kind of looking at that range when breaking down kind of, you know, that par 4 scoring in general. And I kind of use the Fantasy National a little bit, because you can break it down into those certain yardages when looking at par 4 or par 5 scoring or whatever in those certain distances. And it's a Pete Dye course. And when looking at Pete Dye courses, kind of, he likes to, you know, play with your eyes a little bit, visual things. So you kind of get some blind tee shots, some blind approach shots, and it's really important on Pete Dye courses, especially on the shorter course. I mean, we've seen Bubba Watson win this twice, and he's a bomber. But these bombers, what they can do is they can, you know, club down, so you got like a little less than driver kind of approach off the tee, where you guys are hitting three woods to kind of, because it's really important to hit your place. So there's going to be hazards out there, trees in certain areas that he sets up, so that you have to hit a certain, you don't just have to hit the fairway, you have to hit certain points of the fairway. And, you know, it's an above average place where guys are going to hit 65 to 70% of fairways on average. And I think like the average for the PGA Tour in general on all courses put together is like 60%, somewhere in there, maybe high 50s, low 60%. So this is definitely a lot of fairways hit here. But to be able to score here, you got to hit the certain points of that fairway, which is going to be really huge this week. So strokes gained off the tee is definitely going to be there for me this week. But again, most importantly, I mention every week, is strokes gained approach coming in. And you combine those two, and that's where you get your strokes gained ball strike. And that's something that I like to combine. And I'll be really looking at that trend coming in for guys who's been ball striking really well coming in.
Yeah, so I don't know how much we can always, you know, you said Pete Dye course, and he has a lot of courses out there. I don't know how much do you think we can use his other courses as corollary to this one for the Travelers, right? So, like, you know, in a new model that I'm putting together, or we've been putting together sort of in conjunction, is that I'm always looking for large sample sizes, but also good comps, right? Like, I want to have – this is what made the U.S. Open sort of difficult last week, is that we just don't have good comps. Like, they haven't played at Shinnecock Hills for a long time, and really the only comps you can possibly use are other USGA events like the Open from the – or the U.S. Open for the previous years, because you know that the courses are going to be made difficult, but that's really not perfect strategy. How much can you think you can use other PTI courses? I mean, it's one thing we can use the Travelers. It's the same course pretty much every year. Are there other PTI courses you can look at and say, oh, these actually will line up with models and make it so that we can actually maybe use the straight numbers from those ones? Or is it just, are the other maybe like underlying conditions or overlying conditions too different that you really can't use them as comps?
No, it's definitely something, and I like that more because I don't know, I'm an information, I'm a stats guy. So the more stats, more information I can fit into models that I can look at to break down my, you know, my field of players that I'm going to be using or betting in that instance is good. So yeah, definitely looking at other Pete Dye courses because he does set them up quite the same. He kind of looks for that visual thing on most of his courses. They don't play long. A lot of them are par 70s. So yeah, I mean, I'm looking at like Sawgrass. We got Harbortown. There's a few other ones. Kiwa Island is another one you can bring up and look at. Whistling Straits. So there's a few out there that we can look at for Pete Dye courses. And that's another thing I look at heavily on Fantasy Nationals. They've got a database of all the Pete Dye courses together. And you can actually click on that and filter that out and look at, you know, players' performance, strokes gained, total, pretty much any stat you want just on Pete Dye courses. So that's definitely something I'm paying very close attention to this week.
All right, so let's talk about some of the golfers that your models are bringing out. You wrote up a really great piece, as always, up on DFSR.com that breaks down the Travelers, breaks down some of the things we mentioned here, things to look for, and just kind of the way the course plays, some of the odds, and then obviously drawing out four or five golfers that you are kind of maybe targeting going into this week. Start us off with guys that seem to be checking all the boxes in what your models are looking for, and maybe that we can shoot some upside on, or even just, you know, appear as if they're safe plays going into the Travelers.
For sure. Paul Casey was one of the first ones. Yep. I wrote up. He kind of hits all over. I mean, he's always there in the stats. He's sixth on my sheet in strokes gained approach. He's played here three times. He was second back in 2015, T17 in 2016, and T5 last year. So definitely looking at him from a course history standpoint. He's got excellent form. I think he's only missed like one cut going back to the start of the Sony Open last year, so like 30 events. So he's made like 29 out of his last 30 cuts looking at stroke play events and stuff. So he kind of hits. He's a high floor and he's a high upside guy. He's already got a win this year. So he's definitely going to be in my core players this week. Another one is...
Real quick, before we move on from Casey, I do want to say something. So in this new model that I've been running and trying to just tweak every week, although I seem to be kind of settling in on the inputs that I think are... they seem like they're passing the sniff test, at least in terms of correlations. Casey's coming in as by far the number one play in the system. Now, I think part of it is because our new system does penalize you for missing cuts. So the part where you said about he's missed two, as far as I can tell, has missed two cuts in the last 128 rounds. Not 128 tournaments. He's played 128 rounds with only two missed cuts. And yep, if we're using that number to inform the safety of a guy, specifically for cash games, of making the cut, there's almost nobody better, at least in the top 15, 30 guys or something like that, in terms of DraftKings salary in this player pool. He has... what by this metric, by easily the most consistent guy among the group. And I don't know about you, but that's something I really weigh pretty heavily, because as you said many times, missing the cut is just a total disaster. And so if you have a guy that just doesn't happen to, plus that he's played this course pretty well, above average in the past. He hasn't crushed it. There's a couple guys I'm going to bring out. No, I take that back. I was looking at the wrong number. He has a 97% rating here, which is anything below one is somewhere where you want to be. It means you're just playing it better. You're playing 3% better than the field. So he's actually among the leaders in this model of the last three tournaments. He's only played two of them, but he's played. I'm going to say all the wrong things here. I should just stop and go back. But anyway, yeah, he's played all three. So he's coming in as the number one just overall raw points guy. Does that make sense to you? I mean, because I'm looking at some really great names here. Thomas, Koepka, Spieth. I mean, these guys are great golfers. It kind of surprised me to see a guy like Paul Casey come in as a number one overall raw points projection for you know, cash games. Is that wonky, or does that pass the sniff test for you?
Oh, for sure. I mean, the system also looks at, like, on my cheat sheet that I provide every week, I don't factor price into my rankings. I'm only looking at course history, form, and stats. And he's 13th in my overall weighted rankings. That doesn't consider price, and yours considers price as well. And, I mean, he's 9,600 on DraftKings and 11,200 on FanDuel. So if you're building cash lineups, that's an easy way to go to start your cash lineups, because you get that safety, you've got the course history, you've got that current form, he doesn't miss cuts, and he's got the stats. He fits the stats model as well. He's right up there on Pete Dye courses as well. He's, I believe, looking at the last 50 rounds on Pete Dye courses. He is 6th in strokes gained total, 2nd in strokes gained ball striking on the Pete Dye courses. So, I mean, he hits every single thing, including the price, being under 10K on DraftKings. It's just definitely it makes sense him being the number one play, especially when looking at cash games.
All right, hit us up with a couple more, because in reading through your article, I think this system is going to disagree, and that's not the strong word. It's going to be run counter to some of these other guys, but I want to try to break down why it might be different on some of the other guys you're going to mention. Who else are you kind of targeting?
One of the guys we're probably going to disagree on when looking at your model and looking at just kind of some upside play is Patrick Reed for me. He's at 10,000 on DraftKings, 11,600 on FanDuel. He finished T5 here last year, T11 in 2016. He missed a couple cuts the 2 years before that, finished T18 in 2013. So he's been up and down here at this course. His strokes gained off the tee, he ranks down a little bit, and maybe something that your system, and I'll let you touch on this a little bit, is maybe just that standard deviation
yes.
for him.
Yep.
But his upside lately, he is actually, when I scroll over and look at DraftKings scoring over the last 5 tournaments, he's number one on my sheet in DraftKings, average DraftKings points per tournament over his last 5 stroke play events. And I mean, that includes the Masters that he won. So that's kind of where the upside comes in for me. And I'll probably be using him. Like I said, I'm mostly a GPP player. So that's why he stands out for me. I wouldn't use him in cash games, but definitely as an upside GPP play, he's right there for me.
Yeah, his standard deviation just a little higher than other groups, guys in his range. I mean, his standard deviation is even higher than a guy like Spieth, who seems like he's been all over the map, right? Now, I know his struggles seem to be more recent than others, especially with the putter. But in terms of missed cuts, you know, Reed is okay, not as good as some, better than others. He's kind of falls in this middle ground among this price tier of guys. There's some guys that are, you know, clearly worse, like Bryson DeChambeau. He's missed a ton of cuts. Yeah, Reed, it's really just that standard deviation that's knocking him, because he's basically middle of the pack in everything else. When I say middle of the pack, I mean among the highest price guys. I'm not going down to the lowest level of DraftKings salaries. But yeah, no, definitely standard deviation is what's holding us back, or holding him back, at least from a safety model. Though here's the thing: standard deviation works two ways, right? Like it can knock you for cash games, but it's the exact thing you want to shoot for when you're looking for tournament wins, because
yes.
It just means he has the great rounds in him. So when you have a higher standard deviation over this many rounds, and he has the most rounds played among, I don't know, the huge group that I'm looking at, he has this high standard deviation among them, meaning that's the exact guy you want to target in tournaments, because that means he has it in him to shoot that. You know, to shoot among the best in the field. It's just that you're going to probably be sweating him out a little bit more than you would some other guys.
It's a little more stressful tracking him for 4 days.
Right.
Yeah.
Hit me up some other guys that you're sort of targeting this week.
Yeah, a guy that I'm really looking at closely this week. He's really popping in all the models, kind of like a Paul Casey for me. Probably has a little more deviation, and I'll ask you about him as well, as Ryan Moore. He's been excellent here at this course as well. He's coming in with some good form. He's good on Pete Dye courses. You know, he's got that price range in the 9,000 range on both sites, low 9,000 on DraftKings. So I'm definitely looking at him. So what is the system saying like for him? His putting is the only thing that really concerns me, but we know that putting is probably the highest variance stat out there, and it can kind of come and go. So he seems more like he's going to be a GPP play for me for sure. I don't know if I would use him in cash, but
well, he's a weird one, because his standard deviation is low. He's getting knocked by having just missed cuts. He's got eight missed cuts in 128 rounds, which is worse. That's a worse multiplier than just about everyone else in his range, not by like a landslide, and so it's close on him. He's a guy, actually, if I were to add more Pete Dye courses, I believe he would get better, right? Like, so if he's been very good on Pete Dye courses, this is my plan to do after we get off the podcast, by the way, is to just start adding some more of those courses to this model. He's a guy that actually probably would be helped, because the standard deviation is great for him. He's been about the same golfer. It's just that he's getting knocked on these missed cuts. Now, the other problem with missed cuts is, which I have not factored in, is like sort of how much you miss by. It's a little bit factored in terms of your standard deviation, but you really get penalized for those missed cuts. And if he's a guy that's been missing cuts by just a stroke, let's say, each time, and you can run bad in that scenario, I believe, then maybe I guess what I'm saying is I'm surprised by how low his standard deviation is for how many cuts he's missed, right? Like, that comparison is usually those are really pretty highly correlated with each other, right? If you play all over the place, you're going to miss cuts. The fact that his is so low and he's missed this many cuts makes me believe that he probably has only missed it's been very, very thin margins where he's missed them. So that could be something that he's getting faulted on, and it's just not fully going to be able to account for every little piece of how many strokes he missed by. So I don't know. That's my long-winded answer to say the system likes more, and it's just this one little thing that's holding him back.
It's probably going to like him more, like you said, when you start adding some of the Pete Dye stuff in there, because he does rank 20th over the last 50 rounds on Pete Dye courses in strokes gained total. He's top 20 in ball striking, top 20 in strokes gained tee to green, and approach shots, and putting, or DraftKings scoring, sorry. So, I mean, he does correlate very well when it comes to Pete Dye courses, so I think he's probably going to get a little bit of a bump when you start adding that data in there as well.
All right, anyone else here? I got a bunch of guys I want to run by you in terms of these guys are passing the sniff test. A
couple of cheaper guys that I'm looking at this week, especially on DraftKings, just kind of in that mid 7K range. Siwoo Kim, he always correlates really well when it comes to Pete Dye courses, so he's definitely one I'm looking at. He's third in strokes gained total over the last 50 rounds. I'm looking at that. He's really good around the green. DraftKings scoring looking there. So the short game is there. The ball striking's there. He correlates well on these courses. And then CT Pan is someone that I'm looking at as well. He's just kind of been trending. He's like 33rd in strokes gained total on Pete Dye courses. So he's kind of he's above average, but he's not near the top. But something I like seeing there is that after a miscut at the Valero, he's really been trending forward. So 76th at the Wells Fargo, which was an MDF. 46th at the Players, 32nd at Byron Nelson, 20th at the Fort Worth Invitational, and then 18th in his last tournament at the St. Jude. So the only thing for him that concerns me is his putting's really up and down. Again, high variance, but the short game. So if he gets a short game going, his approach shots have been there, the strokes gained off the tee have been there. And like I said, I like to see that when a guy comes off a miscut and then just slowly gets better each and every week, and he's had a better performance each and every week for like a little over a month now. So that's something I like looking at for picking guys out who are in that cheap range, who are still priced down because of that, some of that bad form and some of that high variance stuff, but are trending in the right direction. He's definitely one that stands out.
All right, let me hit you with a couple guys here, because one, sure. You know, in terms of running models on DraftKings right now, these are two guys that are coming in to just about I would call them every lineup guys. And a lot, one is because I'm performer. They're both based on performance, but I think they're even more based on price. And you know, it's funny about it, even if you don't have a projection model, sometimes you can, and I've mentioned this with other sports as well on other podcasts, but you can sometimes just do comparisons between the two sites, FanDuel and DraftKings, regress it a little bit for the differences in that they, in terms of how much you have to spend on salary. But if you just look at the difference in price on these two guys between FanDuel and DraftKings, you have to say to yourself, well, which one of these sites possibly made a mistake going too high or too low? And that's one is Patrick Cantlay. We talked about him. He was a guy that had in every lineup going into the U.S. Open, made the cut. It wasn't very good, but made the cut. And then Grillo. So those guys are not in a very upper tier on FanDuel, but relatively speaking, much more expensive on FanDuel than they are on DraftKings. Cantlay, 8,400. Grillo, 7,700. For my purposes, I'm not going to be able to get away from these two guys at all in cash games. Does that strike you as correct? I can walk through a little bit of why, but do those names at 8,400 for Cantlay, 77 for Grillo, does those make sense in running out in cash games on DraftKings?
Grillo. I read that the other day that he likes it to be called Grillo, even though a lot of people are calling it Grillo, trying to put that accent on there. But he missed the cut at the U.S. Open. Not too concerned about that. Just being how hard it played, but before that he had made 19 straight cuts, so he's definitely, you know, very consistent. And if you read my article every week, I've had him, I didn't write him up this week, but I did write him up probably each of his last five tournaments. He's like an every article guy. He's just a guy I pump in there because he's always got a good price and he's been very consistent. So that's definitely something I like to put in there. He correlates on Pete Dye courses, top 25 in strokes gained total, third in ball striking on Pete Dye courses, thanks to excellent approach shots, and he's top 40 in DraftKings scoring on those Pete Dye courses. I mean, he correlates there as well. Cantlay, he's been, you know, his price seems to always stay down there as well, so he's someone that always correlates for me in that 8K range. The only thing that he gets a knock for on my sheet is that he missed the cut in his only trip here to this course in 2014, but he's a bit of a different player now. He's been very consistent this season, and statistics-wise on my sheet, he's top 10 in ball striking coming in, so that's something I'm looking at heavily. And so, you know, I can see, I agree with the system putting both those guys in there.
And I, you know, I only went back to 2015 with the Travelers, so he probably would have gotten a little bit of an, if I'd gone back one more year, he probably starts getting a knock. So it's really for him to not have any course history in my, in this system, to not have any course history is kind of helping him, because if, again, if I go back one more year, he definitely gets knocked down a little bit. And I have a feeling we're going to get a more accurate sense, or a little bit of a different sense once we start adding those Pete Dye courses in, because it'll be interesting to see where he... I mean, do you have a sense right now off the top of your... Are you able to look real quick about where he lands for Pete Dye courses, or is that just... if not, I can throw out another game. I can throw out some more names here.
Nope, I got it right here. He's top 15 on Pete Dye courses.
So maybe not. So maybe he actually just gets help then. He doesn't... Honestly, at this price, he actually doesn't really need much more help. He would have to get completely dusted in terms of just being horrible at these courses, which just doesn't look like he's going to be. And he hasn't played as many rounds. This guy's missed one cut in 98 rounds. So I get with a very low standard deviation. There's just, again, when you're looking at trying to just get guys to Saturday, keep scoring Saturday through Sunday... This is just, he just seems like he's the exact guy, at least for my purposes, what I want to throw in there. A couple of more guys I wanted to throw out here. Patrick Rogers. This guy has missed a ton of cuts, but he's got like a really crazy high standard deviation because he has been able to put it together at times and has been above average in the Travelers. He's played the last three Travelers and been very good relative to the field. He's shooting something like 2% better than the field. Maybe a little bit more than that. And 2%, by the way, is pretty significant for our purposes. Shooting 2% better than the field over the last three Travelers. But the guy's just missed a gajillion cuts. 22 missed cuts over the last 2 years that I'm calculating here, with a standard deviation that's just kind of through the roof. But it kind of strikes me as a you know, at an 80 to 1 long shot, or 80 to 1 odds, is this a guy that you can see, like, does he have the pedigree to put together a winning round, or is he a guy that can, you know, a guy that can finish top 10 at sort of a lower price point? What are your thoughts on Rogers?
He seems overpriced to me just with that high variance. I think that price does come from, you know, those last 3 years. He finished third here last year and top 46 over the last, you know, 2015 and 2014 here at this course. So I think a lot of that price is coming from that. This year, like you said, with the high variance, his stats are like outside the top 100 when looking at ball striking. So he's going to be a guy that's going to be 1% or 2% owned on DraftKings. And, you know, with his course history and being, you know, a little bit better on the Pete Dye courses, I think he does make a nice high upside GPP play. He's not going to win the tournament, I don't think, at all. But maybe, you know, a top 20 at that price at 1% to 2% owned, I think makes a lot of sense for sure.
All right, last guy. Pat Perez. He's another guy that seems like he's coming in a little bit cheap, or a little bit at least on the cheaper side. He's a guy that is coming in to, when I run FanDuel and DraftKings, he's a guy that's coming into both lineups. Actually, it's really funny. This week, for all intents and purposes, the models DraftKings and FanDuel FanDuel lineups are almost exactly the same. That was not the case for the U.S. Open last week. There was like maybe three guys overlapping, and then the rest were really different, as I think things were pretty close. But this week, we have... at least for right now, I have five of the six guys are overlapping. Perez is a guy that's coming into both lineups. Is he a guy that strikes you as a safety play when it comes to putting together cash games?
It's tough to call him safe right now. His form's been a little bit off. He was very safe, you know, before the Masters. He missed the cut at the Masters and then the Valero and then the Players. He's had 42nd, 70th, and 36th in three tournaments since. So he's starting to come back into form a little bit. But I love his price at 7K. It seems way too cheap for, you know, the type of player that he is. I'm just going to look at a couple.
Just while you're looking that up, I'm just going to say, in his price range, he has by far the least amount of cuts for the most rounds in the 7,000 price range. I think that's really what's helping him here. Again, he's a guy that hasn't played the Travelers in the last 3 years, so he might get a knock when we get down to some Pete Dye stuff to sort of smooth out at least these guys that haven't played there. Because I always, you know, when you haven't played somewhere, some guys are getting an unfair advantage, some guys aren't. This is the problem with just using strict numbers from time to time, is that you're just given the hand you're dealt with in terms of the data. But he has not, with no sample size for the Travelers, he's being helped by that he's been moderately consistent, but mostly he's just been consistent for this price range, and especially when it comes to making cuts.
Yeah, definitely. And you're getting a top 35 player in the world at 125-1 odds, and anyone else in that price range on DraftKings is in the 250 to 200 odds range.
All right. Let's. Any final guys to think about here before we get out of here? I'm getting excited. You got me all excited. U.S. Open 1 week, and Travelers another week. I'm all into golf now. Anyone else I should take a look at before we get out of here?
That's pretty much all I'm looking at. You know, for more plays, I'm going to start highlighting a few guys on my sheet in different price ranges for GPPs. So definitely check out my cheat sheet as we get closer to lineup lock. Doesn't look like weather's going to be too much of a problem this week. So, yeah. Let's crush it again this week.
Yeah, I'm getting excited. Like I said, whenever I just start spending too much time with a certain sport, it's good for me. Probably not good for my family. Chris is doing great work for us all the time. He's got his article up on the Travelers now. He usually puts up the aforementioned cheat sheet, which you can get a link to in the members only chat on dfsr.com/MLB. So just sign up for that. He's posting that, and that's just for members that to be able to use and kind of reference as they go to build lineups going into each and every week. You can follow him at Jaeger_Bombs9 on Twitter, where he's got a great Twitter game, I would say, especially when it comes down to golf and NASCAR weekend. So always great stuff, man. Keep an eye out for the rest of his content coming out this week. Buddy, good luck in the Travelers.
Yeah, cheers, man.